This is Marion Haberly interviewing Evelyn Dan, a resident of Lakeville for many years now, on March 13th, 1985. And Evelyn, when did you first come to the village of Lakeville?
We came in April 1925, when we were moving from Ellenville, New York, where Father had been the Methodist minister, to be the minister in Lakeville. And it was a rainy day, and we, my sister and I, and my little sister and all, and the kitty cats in the car, we were all very weepy most of the way till we got to the top of Delavern Hill. And then the sun came out, and it was beautiful, and that lovely view, and our spirits really lifted up. And we drove into the village of Lakeville and saw the parsonage where we were going to be, and it looked so lovely with all the elm trees down the street, which are all gone now.
Yes.
And we went into the house, and everything was so lovely, and it laid out with all these goodies that the folks had left for us, cakes and pies and three great big containers of Guernsey milk with the richest cream on top I'd ever seen. And then people found we were there. Before we knew it, there were about, a dozen or so of the trustees that came in to see us. And they all seemed so nice, and things just, we thought, well, we're going to like it.
Uh-huh. I guess you did. We stayed here quite a while.
We were there for 8 years.
8 years your father was minister
in Lakeville.
Mm-hmm. At that time, you had finished high school?
My sister Mary was graduating that June from high school, and I was post-graduating from high school.
So you waited a while before you started college?
Yes, I waited a year because my sister had just graduated from Oberlin, my older sister, Charlotte. And my brother Charles was still, he was to be a senior the next year. So I stayed out a year and took piano lessons from Marion Bartram, who became my best friend. She was the organist of the church in Lakeville.
She was the organist of the Methodist Church.
Of the Methodist Church. Mm-hmm.
I see. Well, you were interested in music anyway.
Oh, yes. Yeah. I had had piano before.
I see.
And, I enjoyed her. I remember my mother said, "So glad I got to know a friend like Marion Bartram before I start off to college."
Oh,
example of what friends can be like.
How did you? Then you spent a year here in 1925 before you went away.
26.
How did you? Did you find work? Did you have to find some employment?
In the spring, went to work at the Gateway, which was a big hotel that's no longer in existence in Lakeville. I worked there just typing, mostly promotion letters, trying to get people to come.
I see,
and,
I see.
Then also, a little bit later in the spring, my sister and I picked strawberries right next to the church, way for about an acre. Earl Day had planted a big strawberry patch. So he asked if we'd like to pick them. So we got up at 5 o'clock in the morning and started in. It was fun at first because we got 2 cents a quart, and they were big. And so we got quite a bit of money, maybe $2-3, which seemed a lot of money. But then they got smaller and smaller. And the sun got hotter and hotter, and it took us till noon to get finished, and it was pretty awful. But then I got my job with Dr. Cadman, S. Parks Cadman. And poor Mary had to go on picking while I sat in the nice cool house and got all of 75 cents an hour, which seemed incredible, for typing for S. Parks Cadman, who was a minister from Brooklyn.
Yes, a very famous minister. He's well known. First of all, I want to ask you several things here. You were speaking about the amount of money you were paid. Of course, this was in 1925.
Yes.
And scales were a lot different. But we can see that the hourly wage was not very high.
No, it was
also,
not.
I imagine your father did not receive too much.
He receives a total of $1,900 a year.
$1,900 a year.
And how he ever sent all five of us children to Oberlin, uh-huh. I really marvel.
Yes, that's
right. Of course,
right.
We all worked at Oberlin.
Yes.
And but then he had to borrow money from the Methodist Book Concern.
Mm-hmm.
And we paid it back after we graduated.
I see. Mm-hmm. I see. Well, I imagine all ministers did not receive a very salary.
No. But of course, they did have the house free.
Yes.
And that's a big item.
Yes, mm-hmm. Yes. Also, while you were speaking of work that you did, could you explain for us where the Gateway Inn was located?
Oh. Yes, you head from Lakeville toward Millerton, and the Gateway Inn was just at the crest of the hill on the right, mm-hmm. opposite now where the Community Fuel is.
I see, mm-hmm. I see. It must have been a large hotel.
It was a large hotel.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. When did they discontinue that?
I am not sure. And I don't think it burned down.
Uh-huh.
I think they just took it down.
I see. Mm-hmm. I see. It was just beyond the Holly Williams house, I guess. A little ways beyond it.
Yes.
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 Also, I had heard mention of Cadman property. Now, where did you go to do this work for S. Parks Cadman? Where was their home here?
Well, when I was working for him, he lived in the big house as you head from Lakeville to Hotchkiss School. It's just past the curve that goes up to the Wake Robin Inn.
Oh, I see.
It's a house now that's almost hidden by a big high hedge.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It was a big house with a beautiful view of the lake.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And until he died, I worked for him for 7 summers.
Mm-hmm.
And then he died.
Uh-huh.
And his widow and Miss Marie Cadman, his daughter, and Miss Lillian Cadman moved to a house that's on the road toward Indian Mountain. On the left.
Uh-huh.
And then his son bought the big house that's sort of behind there that is now has 6 or 7 houses that the people live in.
Uh-huh. That's the property where there are some stone pillars along the...
Yes.
At the corner.
And, that's right.
Yes. At the intersection of Indian Mountain and 112.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And it has a name. I can't think what they call it.
No. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't know. Mm-hmm. I just, I wanted to pinpoint where he had been. Okay. I heard on another of the tapes that we have of people saying strawberries were grown along the property, which is now the Salisbury Central School property. So evidently strawberries were quite a crop here.
I think so.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
This was Earl Day, and his family were the one that built the house where the Housatonic Psychiatric Center is now, the house with the pillars.
Oh, I see.
Right next to the church. Mm-hmm. That was the Day house.
Uh-huh. And the strawberry fields were in the back.
In the back. Extended mm-hmm. way back to the pine trees.
They must have left quite an impression on you.
They did.
Tell me, how was Lakeville different at that time in regard to the appearance of the town? And
well, for one thing, there were these beautiful elm trees all across from the parsonage, 5 or 6 of them, huge, lovely, lovely elm trees. They've all gone.
Mm-hmm. 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 Yes.
And then, of course, there was a garage, Dufour's garage there on the left, where the intersection is.
I see.
And we went along a whole block of stores. There was the Western Union there, and Barnett, Heaton Barnett store.
Uh-huh.
And believe it or not, an A&P store came next.
Uh-huh.
we had all kinds of food stores. We had an A&P store, we had a First National store, and we had, well, that, at that time it wasn't First National, it was Robert's store.
Yes.
And then it later became the First National. And then we had the Goderich Meat Market, and we could buy almost anything in Lakeville then.
In that respect, Lakeville has certainly changed.
It certainly has.
Yes. Why do you think they tore down was the stores that were along
I
Montgomery?
Suppose just to beautify the place, maybe. And they were going to tear down the one where the Salus Lake Jewelry Store is.
But
there was some kind of a somebody's will or something. They had to leave it there till Mr. Dufour died.
Oh.
And then he died, and they still haven't torn it down.
I see. Mm-hmm. I see. Well, I think there was something in the paper about
it. It's come up again recently.
Yes.
And the Salus Lake Jewelry Store is sad because they don't know where to go.
Yes. It's unfortunate for a small businessman.
Very much so.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. We, I guess most of our small businesses here in Lakeville have become specialty shops.
Mm-hmm.
Were there as many antique
places
in
No, there weren't. I don't remember any. Mm-hmm. And of course, there weren't the, like the Lakeville Precision Molding, that wasn't there then.
Mm-hmm.
And neither was the, well, the Lakeville Journal was there, and
mm-hmm.
and but the place across from it, that wasn't a business there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It was a store that Mr. Bolts had.
Bolts?
Yes. The father of the Bill Bolts.
And this was near where the Lakeville Journal
Yes,
was?
Across from where the Lakeville Journal.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What kind of a store was that?
Well, I've been trying to think. All I remember is he used to be always singing when you went in there.
Oh.
Or whistling.
Well, it was like a happy place.
Like his son did when he worked at the First National.
Uh-huh.
Perhaps it was kind of a stationery store.
I see. Mm-hmm. I see.
And then later on, Mr. Pavola had a stationery store, and where they had the newspapers and so forth, right sort of across from the... Well, what used to be the school and is now the post office.
Oh. Yes, there are that reddish building now.
Mm-hmm. That has antique plates and things.
When you moved here, was the school still on that at that location?
Yes.
Yes, that was the high school?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And my sister Cora, who was... In the fourth grade when we came here, had a very nice teacher in that school by the name of Miss Bessie Argel. And I remember we got a letter. We, Mary and I, had to go back to Ellenville until we graduated and post-graduated.
Yes.
We stayed with friends. And Mother wrote a letter about this very nice teacher that Cora had in the fourth grade, Miss Bessie Argel.
Mm-hmm.
Never dreaming that someday she was going to be our stepmother.
Yes. She came from an old family in town, did she not?
Of the Bartle family that came here from Michigan. He was to take over the ore mine place.
Mm-hmm.
And he had 13 children. And the day he came in Millerton, they stopped to eat at the, I think they called it the Brick Block Hotel in Millerton.
Oh, yes.
All 15 of them. And the man that owned it was talked to them and found they were going to come and live around here and everything. When they finished their meal, the man says, "That's on me. I'm not charging you a cent." Said, "A family of your nature coming to is going to be a great addition to Lakeville."
Well, isn't
and
that
it,
interesting?
It proved to be, too, because that's where Bill Barnett, who was our first selectman,
uh-huh.
he wasn't born then,
yes.
but he was a grandson.
His mother was a Bartle.
His mother.
Yes.
And Bessie Argel's mother was a Bartle.
The whole
Bartle family was spread out and did different jobs all over the place.
Yes. Mm-hmm. There are many still here in
yes.
town.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. That's very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
You mentioned the ore mine, that put me in mind of the schools. There was a one-room school down there. Were there any of the one-room schools still here when you came?
I think not.
No.
Bessie Argel, first job was in a one-room school on the way up to Salisbury School. You'll see a place where it just about looks about room for a car to park. And that's where her one-room school was, her first job.
Oh, mm-hmm. Off of 44.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Oh, that's interesting. Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm. I imagine a number of the teachers who were in the school at that time had originally come.
I think
from one-room schools.
Yes.
Yes, it must have been quite a change for them.
I should say so.
Yes. Were there many opportunities for young people when they graduated from high school and or also from college mm-hmm. to find work in Lakeville and Salisbury?
I would say no. It seems to me even less than they have now.
Really?
It seems to me that way.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's unfortunate.
Very much so.
Yes.
See, Lakeville was sort of a retirement home for famous ministers like Dr. S. Parks Cadman.
Uh-huh.
And Robert E. Speer, who was the head of the Presbyterian Missions for many years, he was uh-huh. here. Uh-huh. And Henry Sloan Coffin.
Oh.
And
Henry Sloan
Coffin.
Coffin.
Yes.
Was he related to a Yale professor
yes.
who has been very prominent?
Yes.
Uh-huh.
Been a little bit infamous, you might say, in some way.
Well,
that's his nephew.
His nephew.
Mm-hmm. 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 Henry Sloan Coffin that lived in the house. I did some typing for him, too.
Uh-huh.
And for Dr. Speer.
Uh-huh.
Or mostly after he died for Mrs. Speer, I typed.
Yes.
But Henry Sloan Coffin lived in the what we have always called the Jerome House, where Jenny Jerome is supposed to have lived. But we have found out through Marion Haverly recently that she evidently did not live there, but we always thought so.
Yeah. A book I read seemed
yes.
to indicate it was her uncle.
Yes.
Who owned that house, who had built it and
yes.
owned it and lived there.
The Lewises didn't know that, and they wrote to Winston Churchill to ask if he'd ever lived in that house. And he wrote them back, he said, not that he knew of, but he could very well have been there as a baby, he said.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Yes. Well, he traveled so much, it's yeah. hard to remember, especially where you were when you were a baby.
Yeah.
Well, then, even in the 1920s, this place was becoming more of a summer home
That's
and
right.
retirement
mm-hmm.
area.
Mm-hmm.
Were there any other large hotels similar to the Gateway Inn?
Well, of course, in Sharon, the Sharon Inn.
That is no longer there, is it?
That burned down.
Mm-hmm.
And then the Delaverne Hotel in Armenia burned down. That
uh-huh.
was a big hotel.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Just for the record, where was the Sharon Inn located?
It was located right across from the clock tower.
Uh-huh. And the other hotel in Armenia?
In Armenia was located right there where the pizza place is now.
Oh, the Four Brothers.
The Four Brothers.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I see. Well, Interlaken Inn was here, was it not?
Yes, but not the building that's here now.
No, no.
And Mr. Percy was the head of it then.
Uh-huh.
And Interlaken was the reason for my first job at Indian Mountain School because
uh-huh.
Indian Mountain School burned down in 1929 and it was just as winter was setting in. So Mr. Percy let our boys come to live at Interlaken.
Mm-hmm.
And it worked out all right, except that it was cold weather and Interlaken wasn't prepared to be open during the winter time. And the boys
oh.
would get up in the morning and turn on their faucets and no water would come. It would be frozen.
Uh-huh.
They'd go down to breakfast and come back and find water all over the place. it had melted, you see.
Yes.
And so when it came time for us to go, had our new building at India Mountain School, and to move back to India Mountain School, Mr. Percy sued us for $50,000.
Oh.
Because of the damage from that water, which
yes.
really wasn't our fault in a
That's
way.
That's right.
But he sued us. And so there was a court session, and Mr. Briggs, who was the headmaster, they had me come up and take dictation from all the masters about their side of it.
I see.
And we had quite a book we made,
mm-hmm.
and that went to court, and we won. We didn't have to pay the $50,000.
Uh-huh. Very good.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you say they sued us. Were you? You were.
I wasn't
really
associated with India Mountain then, but my father was.
Oh.
He was their chaplain.
Uh-huh.
And he taught Bible there.
Oh, I see.
Mm-hmm.
I see.
And he enjoyed it. That was in the days when Quentin Roosevelt used to be there. Young Quentin.
Uh-huh.
And Father enjoyed his, what would you say, is there such a word as ebulliency or something like that?
Well, yes, there is.
Yeah. He was just full of it. Even when it had to do with the Bible, he would just get so excited about it. And it sort of kept the whole class alert.
I see.
I used to go up sometimes just for fun with Father.
Uh-huh.
And it was very interesting. They had
a
very kind of exciting class in Bible.
Yes.
Thanks to Quentin.
Was he Teddy Roosevelt's son?
Teddy's son.
Oh.
Yeah.
He must have been the youngest.
I guess so.
Yes.
And he was so excitable that Mr. Biggs used to say, "Calm down, Quentin, calm down. Chew your cud." And so ever after that, whenever Quentin wrote to Mr. Biggs, he would he'd say, "Yours very truly," and then just put a picture of a cow.
Oh. That's an interesting story.
He came back to Indian Mountain once to speak to us, and it was very interesting. Then he went back to China and was killed.
Oh.
And something to do with a boat. He was in a boat that went down or something.
Uh-huh. I see.
Very sad because he
was
young. He must have been under 30. I'd like to read about it somewhere and find out just what age he was. But he was young.
Mm-hmm. Well, tell me, we've mentioned Indian Mountain School. You had left Lakeville to go to college, and then your father...
Well, no, I was still in Lakeville when I went to college.
Yes.
And graduated from college in 1930.
Yes.
That was the year my mother died.
Uh-huh.
And then father, 3 years later, went down to Brewster.
Uh-huh.
And after he got down there, married this Lakeville teacher, Miss Bessie Argo.
Uh-huh.
And at that time, I went down to Brewster for weekends and played the Presbyterian organ. I'm jumping ahead of myself. I wasn't working. I went down to Brewster with them and worked at the Reader's Digest for parts of 2 years. And then they discovered I could type, so they put me in the correspondence department and said I would be a permanent. And it was just about that time that the job at India Mountain came open with Mr. Riggs, because his secretary had to go to Florida because of her husband's health.
Mm-hmm.
And so I came back up to Lakeville. Father was still in Brewster and started working for Mr. Riggs.
I see. And your work on helping them in taking testimony for the lawsuit helped you get this.
Yes. Yes.
Well, at
least they knew me, you see.
Yes. And you were well recommended by your work.
Yeah.
I see. And how long were you at Indian Mountain School?
37 years.
37?
Yes.
Oh, my. You must have seen a lot of interesting children go back and forth.
Yes. And, it was fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
I had some mighty fascinating times, too.
Yes. Mm-hmm. At that time, I guess when you first came there, the children still could come up by railroad to attend school, couldn't they?
Mm-hmm.
Where did the train come in?
To tell the truth, none of the... when I first went there, they were all boarders. There weren't any day scholars.
Yes.
And I was the only one that came up by train after my weekend Donna Brewster. I would come by train.
No, I didn't mean as coming daily. I meant when they came when they arrived. September and so on.
Oh, yes, they arrived by train.
Yes, yes. And did someone from the school meet them?
Yes.
And bring them over?
Yes.
Yes.
I don't let them tell this. This is, well, quickly I'll tell you perhaps. We had a boy by the name of Jimmy Damon.
Mm-hmm.
And his father was a doctor, Dr. Virgil Damon, who was quite famous. He'd had a big, long article in the Lakeville Journal about himself and so forth. Well, he never could come up in New York because he was too busy.
Mm-hmm.
But finally, he called up one Saturday morning and said, "Tell Jimmy we're coming up." And so I told Jimmy, he was so excited. And just before it was time for Dr. Damon and Mrs. Damon to arrive, the telephone rang. And it was a hospital. Where he was a baby doctor who was using this special kind of something with mothers about to give birth.
Mm-hmm.
Very special. Wrote about it in the Digest. And the hospital says, "Has Dr. Damon arrived yet?" And I said, "No." And he said, "Tell him he's got to come right back. One of his special cases has come. And he's got to get right back." And he said, "We looked it up, and there's a train that leaves at 2:15. And he was to get in at 2 o'clock. And I said, "Well, I'll see what I can do."
Mm-hmm.
And they said, "Tell him it's a matter of life and death."
Mm-hmm.
And so when I went out to the road to meet Dr. Damon. And when they came with the taxi, and I said, "Dr. Damon, the hospital called, and you've got to get right back, take the train that leaves in about 8 minutes now from here." And I said to the taxi man, "Can you take him there? Isn't time." He said, "Can't do it, won't do it." And so I just dashed in and got my keys and got my car and got the Damons in my car, and we started off to see if we could make it. And the taxi man was so mad, he went on ahead of me, and at the cutoff, there was a hay wagon, and he went parked right by the hay wagon, so I couldn't get by. And so I went right up the hill, and made it about a quarter of a mile further,
mm-hmm.
but I was going about 60, and went up the hill, and headed toward Millerton as fast as we could. And on the way, the doctor was saying, "Call the hospital as soon as you get back and tell them to give her." He gave me these things, of course, I'd never heard about, and I tried to remember them, what they were. And so then we came into Millerton, came around there, and just bent down. We saw the trains leaving the station. So I just sat on the telephone. I mean, sat on the horn.
Uh-huh.
And just kept it going. And I couldn't get to the train because there were so many cars parked.
Yes.
So I went up on the sidewalk. Now, fortunately, there was nobody walking on the sidewalk. And it wasn't too deep a heavy curve.
Mm-hmm.
Went down the sidewalk, still with my horn going. Mm-hmm. And so then I got right close to the train, and they stopped.
Oh, they did stop.
And I let them in.
Uh-huh.
Later, Dr. Damon called me up and said, "You saved a lady's life."
Oh. Well, that made you feel good. I think you, from other stories I've heard you tell about driving around, I think you were very courageous. For example, driving the children to school.
Oh, I was. I had a two-door Chevy, and I started in driving just one boy from Falls Village, Johnny Newman, who now I believe is a judge here in Hartford.
Uh-huh.
John Newman. And then every year it got more and more, till the last 2 years I was picking up 11 children in my two-door Chevy. The last two were the Becketts, which only had about a mile and a half to go. I called them my three-decker sandwich.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It was one thing I knew, they couldn't open the door and fall out because they were in the back seat.
Yes.
It was just a two-door. And I did that for 7 years.
Uh-huh. That's a long time, and it's a very courageous thing to do.
Foolhardy, really. But
well, nothing happened.
Nothing happened.
The good Lord was watching over you.
Insurance man knew it. He was my brother-in-law, and he knew I was doing it.
Uh-huh. But he didn't say anything.
I couldn't take any money or anything like that.
No, no. These were day students.
They were day students.
Yes.
By then, Bill Doolittle was there, and he started taking day students. And girls. We had never had girls before.
Oh. Mm-hmm. Oh. So you took girls a long time before some of the prep schools were taking them.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Where did most of these... Indian Mountain School started at what grade level?
When I first went, it started first grade,
yes.
Believe it or not, as boarders.
Uh-huh.
And went through the eighth.
Uh-huh.
And then the Hotchkiss School started Town Hill School,
yes.
which went from the first to the fourth.
Yes.
So we locked off our first grades and started with a fifth and added a ninth grade.
Oh, I see. Mm-hmm. You went from fifth to ninth.
Mm-hmm.
Suppose there were students who qualified and whose parents wished them to go to either Hotchkiss or Salisbury. What did they do? Did they leave Indian Mountain after the eighth grade? Because those mm-hmm. two started
that still
the ninth.
Exists. A number of our eighth graders leave,
mm-hmm.
but others have gone and jumped a year
mm-hmm.
into Hotchkiss or Salisbury.
I see.
But a good many leave at the end of the eighth grade, but uh-huh. not the largest percentage.
Yes, yes. Mm-hmm. Bill Doolittle was interviewed. He was he spoke of the schools and the students, and he was very proud of the accomplishments of Indian Mountain's
well,
students.
Good.
And
yeah. Well, Hotchkiss School. I remember when they dedicated Doolittle Building there.
Mm-hmm.
Connie Doolittle, that was Bill's wife,
mm-hmm.
was very ill with cancer. And that was her last public appearance.
Uh-huh.
But the headmaster of Hotchkiss School just gave her a glowing acclaim.
Uh-huh.
For he said, we know that the boys coming from Indian Mountain under Connie Doolittle are better prepared than any others we get here at Hotchkiss
uh-huh.
School.
Oh. She was associated with Indian Mountain also?
Yes. Connie had been a teacher there at the time when Bill got his divorce from
uh-huh.
Sue
mm-hmm.
Doolittle, who later married Ralph Ingersoll.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And Connie fell in love with Bill, and he was in love with her.
Mm-hmm.
And so they were married
uh-huh.
after he came back from the war.
I see.
And that after Sue tried just desperately to get him back, she used to come. And so Connie was an excellent teacher.
Uh-huh.
And they retired
uh-huh.
in 1970, uh-huh. hoping to, well, they did take a trip around the world,
mm-hmm.
the faculty
mm-hmm.
and parents gave them the money for a trip around the world.
Isn't that
they
wonderful?
They had a wonderful time.
Isn't that
but
nice?
But poor girl, then she got cancer.
Uh-huh.
It was
uh-huh.
very sad because she was 15 years his junior.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. That's too bad. That's very sad. I did not realize that both of them were connected with the school in
mm-hmm.
that way.
Mm-hmm.
That's a wonderful thing.
She was a wonderful teacher.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Are there any other people or students or incidents that you remember relating to Indian Mountain?
Well, now let's see. Mm-hmm. There were plenty.
The Buckley children all attended there,
yes.
did they not?
Originally, the Buckleys had their own school. And taught their progeny. They had plenty of them.
Yes.
But then that was given up, and then they started in Indian Mountain.
Uh-huh.
And we had Jane Buckley Smith's children, and we had the other Buckleys. We had a lot of them.
Uh-huh.
And they were the cream of the lot.
Oh, really?
We had a job not to giving our highest prize to all the Buckleys and the Smiths and so
oh.
forth, because they were not only brilliant, but awfully nice.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
A lot of
I
our
see.
Prizes had lot to do not only with brains,
mm.
but with people that were had wonderful.
Yes.
They were a fine bunch of children.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
Well, that's very interesting.
Did you notice Mrs. Buckley's had 93 progeny, the one that just died last Sunday, Mrs. Buckley?
Oh, I did not realize she had passed away.
Yes, she died Sunday morning.
Oh.
Yes.
Oh.
And the paper said she had 93 progeny. 33
uh-huh.
were great. Grandchildren.
Isn't that marvelous?
Isn't that something?
That certainly
yeah.
is wonderful. Well, I meant to ask you, getting back to Lakeville itself and the time you lived here when your father was minister, are there any special events that occurred that you might remember? Now, you were here at the time of Lindbergh's flight. And having lived on Long Island, I know many people remembered that vividly.
Mm-hmm.
Did people take notice of things like that?
Well, to tell the truth, that was 1927, I
right.
think. And I was at Oberlin. Uh-huh. And of course, at Overland, we all did. It was very thrilling.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But now, I was in Lakeville at the time of when the Lindbergh baby was kidnapped.
Uh-huh.
And it was very strange. I was typing a story for a lady that lived at Wake Robin.
Uh-huh.
And nobody was home. And I was eating my lunch. I turned on the radio, and I heard this saying about a baby being kidnapped. It was just sounded just like the story I was writing.
Oh, really?
I thought, isn't this strange? And I listened to it, and then I discovered it was a Lindbergh baby.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Nice. You did a lot of typing for people.
A lot.
Yes.
I typed for the Wrights for 15 years or so. Typed about 20 of Mrs. Wright's books for children, you know.
Oh, what was her full name?
Enid Lamont Meadowcroft.
Oh, yes. Well, I know her by that name.
Do you?
I didn't
Do you
know
really?
Her married name. Oh. Well, I know of her.
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, she was lovely.
Yes.
And she made me, all her books made me feel so patriotic.
Oh, yes, she did.
Because they were all
historical.
History.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's like
yes.
On Indian Trails with Daniel Boone,
mm-hmm.
Davy Crockett,
mm-hmm.
and on Egypt, she wrote, because her first husband, Mr. Meadowcroft, was an Egyptologist.
Oh, uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You, I think there was another author that you said you typed for.
Well, William Allen Nielsen, the uh-huh. ex-president of Smith College.
Uh-huh.
I typed for him.
Uh-huh.
Up on uh-huh. top of, I was going to say Dibble Hill in Falls Village. Oh, well, never mind.
No. Well,
the hill there.
Oh. wasn't there an author who lived on Asylum Road that you said
Where's Asylum Road?
Asylum Road down down here off of Wells Hill. Old Asylum Road, they called it.
Well,
I can't recall his name right now myself. He wrote historical fiction also. Mm-hmm. And, I guess I have it wrong. I thought maybe you had typed for him also.
I did type for a famous commercial artist, Peter Helk, who mm-hmm. lives at Boston Corners now. He's in his 90s.
Oh, really?
And he was a
great... Peter Helk?
H-E-L-C-K.
Oh, C-K.
And he had a lot of illustrations for the Saturday Evening Post and things like that. Uh-huh. All of cars, races that he did in mm-hmm. France and Italy followed. Mm-hmm. He'd go over there every year, these famous mm-hmm. races. And yes. he'd write them up, and he had his paintings of them.
Mm-hmm.
Hundreds of them.
Uh-huh.
And he wrote this book called The Checkered Flag.
Oh.
And I typed that for
mm-hmm.
him.
Mm-hmm.
Sold for $50 way back, that was years ago.
Well.
And now this about 2 years ago, or maybe 3 years ago, he wrote another book, which is a great big book and sells for $125.
Mm-hmm.
But he asked me if I'd type it, and I had retired by then, and I said, oh, please, Peter, no. I'm kind of retired now.
Yes, yes.
Mm-hmm. You, an awful nice man.
You mentioned Boston Corners.
Yeah.
That seems to be a very sleepy little town now.
Yes.
Was it that way when you first came here to Lakeville?
I think so. Where he lives is on a farm.
Uh-huh.
And he has barns. And in that barn, I think he still has this 1907 car that mm-hmm. must be worth, I don't know, $30,000 mm-hmm. or something.
Oh, yes.
And it was the car he saw a race in 1907
mm-hmm.
With this car taking part. I think it's a Fiat, but somebody mm-hmm. else said, no, it isn't a Fiat.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, he said, he was just a young boy then, and he said, someday I'm going to own that car.
Mm-hmm.
And he owns it.
Oh, mm-hmm. oh. Yeah. Yes, that's quite a hobby. Mm-hmm. Well, are there any other things that you would like to mention that I didn't think to ask about?
Well, it was my father that brought the first tornado to Lakeville.
Oh.
Did I ever tell you about that?
Yes, I think you did. Now tell us on the tape.
He went one day, went down to Tom Wagner's office where he had his insurance and said, I want to take the clause about tornadoes out of my insurance. I don't know whether Tom gave him a reduction or what, because he said, we've never had tornadoes here in Lakeville.
Mm-hmm.
So Tom Wagner said, okay, so he took it out. The very next day, Father had to go to Goshen, New York, to speak, for they had the 100th anniversary of the church or something like that. And when he came back, he found Lakeville had its first tornado. And he said it was headed right toward his house. Dr. Noble lives just two doors down, and he had just had $2,000 worth of work done on his trees, so everything, and it just lopped the tops of all those trees off, the whole, and headed right toward Father's house. And Father had a roomer staying at the house, and she said, it sounded to her as if there was just a freight train coming right at her. Horrible noise. All it did was knock a geranium off the porch. That hill behind the house saved it. But it went right up the top of the hill and did a lot of damage up there.
I see.
But so Father went back to Japan the next day. You better put that clothes back in again.
What year was this?
Golly, I wish I knew.
Was this while he was still minister here or when he had retired?
It was after he had retired. He retired in 1945. So it was probably
sometime
around
after
in
that.
The 50s.
So the house you're speaking of is the one in which you now live.
Yeah, that's right.
And the hill
he
died,
he left the house.
Is the one that goes up to
Lincoln City Road.
Lincoln City Road. Yes.
But it certainly did seem as if it was headed to take his house, but the hill, I think, was what saved it.
Well, that's unusual.
But we've had tornadoes since then.
You have?
Yes.
Yes.
But that was the first one that anybody knew that ever come here. Like,
I guess he reinstated it in his insurance and left it. Well, Evelyn, you say that you were acquainted with a Wanda Landowski who lived here. Did she live as a permanent resident or summer?
She had been in Lakeville. She'd come over from Paris. And then I lived in New York a while and given concerts in New York. And then came up here just to live.
And she was a harpsichordist.
She was a harpsichordist, one of the most famous in the world. She was the one that brought the harpsichord back to this music. It sort of died away. Now, since then, the harpsichord has gotten to be quite active in concerts and things. But
in what capacity did you know her?
Well,
as a friend, acquaintance?
I had, Father had one of her pupils as a roomer at his house.
Oh, I see.
And, but the reason I had met her one day, I had seen her picture in the 1924 Etude magazine. And so I met her on the street one day and I said, "You must be Madame Landowska." And she said, "Yes." She said, "How'd you know?" And I said, "Well, because of that picture in the Etude in 1924. And she used to walk a great deal. And she even used to pick up sticks, because where they came from, the slightest stick was saved in France. And she used to sometimes just pick up sticks out of habit and take them home. Well, she lived in the big house just beyond what was the gateway.
I see.
Only I think by the time she came to town, the gateway was gone. And she gave lessons, and she recorded there. A lot of her records are recorded there. And she has three harpsichords, I believe, there. And one of them had quite a story. During the war, when she had her salon outside of Paris, in Saint-Leur, it was called Saint-Leur. And the Germans took it over, and she had to escape. She and Denise Restu and her cook had to escape practically for their lives. And the Germans that took it over were to send all, were given instruction to send all these harpsichords to Germany. But it just happened one of them had been a pupil of Wanda's, and he knew how this particular harpsichord was just her life, because, and without letting anybody know, he got it sent to the United States, so now it's in the house in Lakeville.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
Is she still living?
No, she died a number of years ago, but her pupil, Denise Restu, is still living and still gives harpsichord lessons.
From that house?
Yes. And Denise, after Wanda died, she had almost finished a book called Landowska and Music,
mm-hmm.
that she wrote with the help of one of the Hotchkiss masters who helped with the English, because she, of course, was Polish. And
mm-hmm.
And Denise got that book published.
Uh-huh.
And that, incidentally, is the house where Sinclair Lewis used to live, but mm-hmm. not for long. He and his chauffeur mm-hmm. lived there.
Uh-huh.
And I've often wondered whether Dorothy Thompson, who was one of my father's favorite, he used to always read Dorothy Thompson,
yes.
whether she ever came here to live yeah. with him,
uh-huh.
or whether they separated then or not.
I see. We've had a lot of famous people
we have
in Lakeville. I guess, and still do.
Yeah.